Hi, my name is Eric Edwards. I played Pearl in the phenomenal movie Blade, and this is the Vampire Movie Minute.
Welcome back to the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast, a podcast dedicated to every all vampire movies we wish to cover here on the show. After Blade, we might go forward to the future for an entire foreign film podcast. It will be kind of interesting, and this will be one people will have to track down. And that's all I'm going to reveal what it is for now. But that will be coming up later this year. Tonight, we're covering minutes 45 to 50 of Blade. Begins with Blade's MILF mom coming out of her little cell. We don't really know this is her because the picture we've seen her at the beginning of the movie is not indicative that this is her, but you know this is her. By the end of the movie, you're like, oh. And it ends with Pearl writhing in pain. Blade's mom is still alive. This was kind of shocking and kind of naughty and puts a spin on the whole, like, you know, Blade's mom's got it going on kind of thing.
I like the this sort of setup here. I mean, obviously, there's no reveal right now, but yeah,
no,
I do like...
you don't see her face either, I don't think, right?
Yeah.
I
didn't... From a distance, you do. I'm not convinced that this is that the person in this minute is the same actress playing, you know, Vanessa Brooks later in the movie. I think this is just kind of a stand-in.
This is Vanessa Brooks.
I know it's the character. I don't think it's the same actress.
This is the same actress. This is,
Sanaa Lathan.
Yeah, Sanaa Lathan. But also Sonya Bennett is listed as the actress as well.
Yeah, I think just purely visually, I don't think they intended to show her face long enough. You know, I think I'm guessing this is a stand-in for this moment.
Well, she's got a wig on in the beginning because it's in the 70s.
No, yeah, that's Sanaa Lathan, absolutely. I just think in this scene right now, I don't think that's Sanaa Lathan.
Gotcha. From what I'm gathering, it seems like it's the same, but there's two actresses listed on the wiki, which is very buggy, by the way. They did not used to be so buggy of a website to go to. I'm trying to see, like, why there's two actresses, or maybe there's a stunt double actress or something like that.
Yeah, could be.
Robert Brooks, by the way, is Blade's father, and we get to meet him in the TV series. He never shows up in this.
Oh, okay.
And he's played by Richard Roundtree, best known as
Shaft.
Oh,
right, yeah.
So, very funny that Blade's dad is Shaft.
I liked that show. That was a decent little show.
It got one season.
Yeah.
It was more adult than this because there was a lot of blood, and there was like the mandate by the network execs being like, we need the girls to be touchy feely. We don't need them in bed together, but we want them to feel like this is going to draw in the male gaze. We're covering that right now on the Dead TV podcast and getting into it because there is tits in every episode, bare breasted women. And it's kind of shocking considering the Blade movies are pretty tame on the sex.
Yeah,
it's a lot of kissing. There's vampires biting each other in the necks, but otherwise, it's kind of a sexless trilogy of films. One thing I always want to point out is that Blade and Karen do not get into a relationship this entire movie. The closest they come to any kind of intimacy is he bites her to regain his strength at the end of the film after he drained of all his blood. That's it. So kudos to them to prevent that from happening. So Blade's mom. And there's the translation of the text, and Deacon gets his call, and then there's hot vamps at the party. Did you notice the little vampire black girl, what she is watching on the TV very briefly?
Yeah. Mortal Kombat?
Yes, Mortal Kombat, which was also by New Line Cinema, so they probably went to their archives and said, ah, let's pull this out and put this in the movie.
As far as like that translation thing with the rendering that he's watching... this thing gets translated and decoded, and then there's already a rendering showing, like, what to do or what's going to happen at this ceremony later in the movie. Like, I guess, I don't know. like looking at it in sort of in detail now, it's like, who put this little, you know, video together, and how did they already know this much information if they didn't have everything translated till now? I don't know. It's makes me wonder.
I was looking up who is the little girl watching the video, watching Mortal Kombat, because she does show up later on in a fight scene with Blade. Because Blade and Karen are at Pearl's place, and Deacon's like, fuck. You know, because Blade obviously got to something Frost wants kept hidden. We also get our Quinn alive and well, sort of. I would not go near that guy the way he looks right now, but you know, whatever. The ladies like him, but he looks like he looks awful. Donald Lowe has had better days.
He's a stepping stone for those ladies to get to Deacon. You know, I love Quinn in this movie though.
Right, and he's just like Frost. He's like Frost. I was just telling you about. I was just telling these girls about you, man. It's awesome. Chase needs, what's her name? Not Chase. Chase is, oh, I'm sorry. Chase is the female bad girl vamp in the Blade TV series. Not Karen, not Dragonetti. Mercury. That's platinum blonde vampire. Mercury. I like her. I wish there was more of her in the movie.
She's got a pretty meaty scenes in the end of the movie.
And here as well. I mean, she got that makeout scene with Frost after he kills the cop. And then dumps his body, you know.
It is funny that we get Matt Schultz. He's like just at the party as one of the guys, and then later on when they're, you know, he gets a line of dialogue when he gets his hand cut off with the sword. But like seeing him here is interesting. You know, he gets two bites of the apple in the Blade franchise because he's in Blade 2 as a different character.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he's one of the vampire hunters. So
there's Party Girl. That could be any of the three party scenes we have in this film. We have three party scenes in this film. We have the one at the club. We have the one that Blade is below, and then we have this rooftop. And it's unclear. One of them could be this girl on IMDb named Yvette Ocampo, who only has two credits to her name, listed as Party Girl and Kissing Woman Girl on IMDb. So, sure. they don't give us a lot of these things. But I think this little girl is martial arts kid because the IMDb looks like her all grown up named Ebony Adams. And she's had a career leading all the way up to the current season of The Lincoln Lawyer, which I didn't know that show was still on. But she has been constantly working throughout her career since she was a little girl, starting with Blade and all the way to today, which is good on her. Continue getting work.
She's really intriguing in this movie because they obviously like focus on her. Like we see her reaction to Deacon, you know, walking by or whatever.
Right.
And then later, obviously, she gets that fight scene, and throughout those two scenes that she's in, never says a word. So she's just really like it just makes her more interesting.
Do you know why she doesn't have any lines?
I don't.
Screen Actors Guild.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, so you have to be paid more with lines. And she was probably underage, too. Obviously, she's got to be, like, 12 years old. So, I am totally going to reach out to her and see if she'll come on the show.
Nice.
Because she's in two scenes of this movie. I doubt she gets talked about with this film. I mean, just out of hypothetically speaking. So I'd be like, hey, we're covering Blade. Come on the show and talk about your... You get to fight choreography with Wesley Snipes, and then he takes you down with one punch, which is great. How was that? And then, you know, what's the setup at this party? Because you're underage at this party, and this is all adults, and there's, you know, this isn't like the Blood Club scene where at least, you know, Quinn and that is getting a blowjob from one girl while he's making out with another one.
Yeah.
So maybe they were like, oh, this scene's got a lot, has no sex in it, she can be in this scene. You know what I mean? Because I guarantee that was probably like a... her parents or a child handler on set type of thing.
Yeah. It just really makes me wonder, like, what's her story? Because I'm assuming she's a vampire.
Clearly, definitely. Like a baby vamp, maybe she's... Yeah, Maybe she's a pureblood, like some of these other...
I'm guessing she's turned, yeah.
And, you know, it's very indicative that Dragon Eddie's apprentice and he turned Deacon Frost. I get that feeling. Like, he's disappointed in what he has changed into a vampire is causing mm-hmm. them a lot of trouble. I really feel like Dragon Eddie and Deacon have a bigger backstory that they never gone into. And on the commentary, it's never mentioned.
Oh.
But even... the actor who plays Deacon Frost says, like, I feel like there was a backstory between these two we didn't get into. And, like, Deacon, like, I was Dragon Eddie's biggest disappointment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dragon Eddie, not Dragon Eddie. I always, it sounds like he's saying Dragon Eddie. What do you think of Pearl? This is gross. And boy, oh boy, is this the fat shaming of a lifetime. People are using this gif of Pearl, stretched out, bloated, gross, smells horrible. It looks disgusting. What do you think of Pearl and like this entire scene with him?
I like Pearl a lot. I remember being really surprised when I first, you know, saw him. And like the idea of a grotesquely obese vampire is really interesting because, you know, you think of vampires and they're typically, you know, near perfect physique, you know. So it's interesting to see this really grotesque vampire. And I did see over on the Blade Wiki, you know, the trivia behind that, it says that the director of the film, Stephen Norrington, stated the cause of Pearl's obese size was the creature gaining a cannibalistic lust for infants and children as he loves to eat their hearts. So he's literally
he's a child murderer.
Okay,
now here's the question: do we forgive vampires for being an allegory for rape? Because rape is bad. But with vampires, it's fantasized, it's erotic, it's hot, we write stories about it, we like it, it's the disease transfer, all the things you think about with rape, but with vampires, we love it. Hmm. Why is that, in your opinion?
Oh, man. I think because it's such a fantasy thing, you know, I guess that's why it gets a pass, because it always has this air of a more romantic sort of time. I don't know. That's interesting.
Definitely. And it continues to this very day. This very day, we have vampire movies coming out. And in children's cartoons, you know, you could cite probably one of the more famous vampire children cartoons of the modern era. It's got four films there's a cartoon series as well. Hotel Transylvania.
Oh. Yeah?
Yeah. I didn't see the last two versions of that movie. I didn't want to.
I think I saw the first one, but
the
I
first one ha- half is watching. All I tell anybody they need to see. Unless you want to see the return of Mel Brooks as Grandpa Vampire to Adam Sandler's Dracula. That's the only reason to watch the second film, is that Mel Brooks plays Grandpa Dracula.
Interesting.
Which is funny, considering he did Dracula Dead and Loving It, so...
Oh, yeah.
And that was, like, the first thing we'd seen Mel Brooks in for a long time, until recently, they just announced that they're doing Younger Frankenstein and Spaceballs 2.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to lose Mel Brooks very quickly.
He just turned 99, I think, like, yesterday.
I cannot believe that.
As of this recording?
I think he's made a joke saying, I hope I live long enough to see the sequel. It's like, oh, God, you better get your stuff... Everyone's like, is he filmed yet? Because...
Right.
We've been losing celebrities in the late 90s pretty hardcore. I mean, Betty White didn't live to be 100. So, but let's pray, right? we'll have a kind Jewish prayer. I'm not Jewish, but I the radio show before mine, Shireen, by Mitch Gordon, will make sure that he says a Jewish prayer for Mel Brooks to stay alive long enough to get Spaceballs and Younger Frankenstein, you know, some kind of cameo. I read his biography, by the way.
Okay.
I didn't read it. I'm sorry. I did not read it. I listened to the audiobook because Mel reads the audiobook.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I had to. Him and Patrick Stewart's. I got the audiobook versions. So I did just pre-order Tim Curry's audiobook. I don't think he is reading it, though. I think his...
yeah, I think he's not doing...
No, I mean, he's recovered from his stroke, but he is, unfortunately, it still affected him greatly.
Sure.
So he's not Tim Currying it like the way he used to, you know?
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
But I digress. Yeah, this whole scene with him, the spirits of the 12 will awaken, the blood god, Karen continues frying him. I love it. And then he's just writhing around in pain as Blade's trying to break into the archive.
Do you think that the Blade understands what Pearl's saying? Because he's speaking, I think, the vampire language, and I assume that Blade also speaks that and understands what Pearl's saying.
I'm almost positive Whistler has taught him.
That would make sense.
He's been a vampire hunter since he was been on the streets. If we're going by the cartoon origin, he's been a vampire hunter since he was a child.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain that the books that we've seen around his place... Makes sense. I mean, he goes to Russia at the end of the movie and speaks Russian.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a made-up language. All language, or as Thor as Thor would put it, all language is made up.
Yeah.
Who is the actor who plays Pearl in the scene? And good God, I feel bad for him.
The wiki that I was reading for that little Pearl trivia says his name's Eric Edwards. I don't recognize Eric Edwards from anything else that I'm... You know.
Well, let's look up and see who he is. Eric Edwards, according to IMDb, is still alive today. He's retired in 2007.
Hmm.
But this is a terrible photo of him. It's very blurry, so it's not 100% positive. There probably could be other Eric Edwards. He's a pornographic actor.
Really?
If this is the same guy, which, you know, we had Tracy Lords earlier in the film.
Honestly, I wish she stuck around longer, because...
She's the best character in the film that's a cameo, but she gets killed. I mean, she rolls right up the... They wrote it badly, and I said this to her when I met Tracy. She's been on my show, and I have a photograph with her. She runs right up to Blade, and Blade kills her. And I was just like, what was that?
Yeah.
She's like, I was only contracted for the beginning of the film. I know everyone points that out. I don't think this is the same actor, though. This guy is a porn, like a straight-up porn star. So I don't think it's him, unless it really is. But also, doesn't Pearl look Asian?
I kind of always thought so as well, but looking at the Eric Edwards on IMDb, you know, he just, you know, he may have some ethnicity in it, you know.
He was in Candyman, The Little Rascals.
Yeah.
He's still working today. So different. Yeah, this is a completely different guy. He's in some stuff that I've never seen.
Sergeant Bilko I've seen once, you know.
Masters of Sex, I've watched every episode of that.
He's still working, yeah. He was just in something called Don't Say It in 2024.
Oh, interesting. Oh. Well,
he's still around, I guess.
We did reach out to have the actor plays Deacon Frost on the show. He turned us down.
Mm.
Yeah, too bad. Kirk Sticky Smith Jones wanted way more money than we could afford. He plays Blade in the TV series.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, unfortunately, also, he's like a big shot, like, what do you call it? Rap star.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so. That's how we end our 5 minutes with Pearl raving in pain. Travis, where can people find you?
Oh, yeah. Check out Minute of Thieves, where I'm breaking down Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, 1 minute at a time. And then Real Comic Heroes, where I talk about comic book movies, starting with Superman and the Mole Men from 1951, working towards the present day. And as of this recording, we just did... what did we do? Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes from 2001. So...
Awesome. We just picked up the box set. Oh, he does have an email address. Well, we'll have to reach out to him. We just picked up the box set at a flea market for $1. Oh, they're, by the way, Ebony's people just got back to me and said they will forward this along to her. Yeah, that was fast.
Dang.
I also emailed her website, so.
Is it Ebony or...
I'm sure they'll correct me. I always ask somebody before they come on the show to just say their name correctly. But, yeah, anyway, what I was saying was I picked up The Adventures of Superman Season 1.
Oh, okay.
And that contains the Superman the Mole Man film as well, because that is the first appearance of George Reeves as Superman.
Right.
And I do like that movie. It gets a little hokey with the children playing the Mole Man. That's so stupid. But that entire thing about a town wanting to wipe out people because they're different and Superman is like, what are you doing? Gee, how could that be more socially fucking relevant to today? Had anyone ever read in the Trump administration or anyone else that wants to wipe out people and make fun of people for being different, Superman versus the KKK? Go read that, people. That might change your perspective on, I'm a Superman fan, but I hate the way people are different than me. Guess what that book's about? It's about a Korean family who moves into a neighborhood and has to deal with the Ku Klux Klan, and guess who happens to be on their side? Superman.
The Korean family side.
Yes, on the Korean family side.
Yeah.
It's actually based on an original radio broadcast where it was black people in the radio broadcast, and Superman being like, you're not dealing with, you know, you're not pushing around people who can't defend themselves this time. You know what I mean?
Nice.
He really,
yeah.
Like, the people behind the radio show were like, no, that is wrong. And we're going to show that our character is against that kind of behavior.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
I think, and let's face it, if you've ever read a Superman comic, but going back to the early days, the Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster stuff, Superman was like putting wife beaters and people throwing out like landlords who were abusing their power out the window, killing them, by the way, probably, because he didn't go swooping down and saving them, putting them on the ground and handing them to the police. He picked up a guy and threw him through the window, and that was the end of the story for that guy. So if anyone ever says Superman's gone woke, I'm like, in what way does that make sense considering Superman versus the KKK is 70 years old? But I digress. As we're talking about a black superhero.
Yeah.
And Wiley the most well-known besides Black Panther.
Oh, yeah.
Out of every superhero that's black, Blade and Black Panther are the two. Why the fuck haven't they been able to get Blade done correctly? Stephen Goyer, who's the writer of the Blade film and the guy behind the Dark Knight trilogy, is like, I don't understand how hard it is to get Blade made as a movie for Marvel. Like, he even said that this shouldn't cost them any money to make. It's a guy who stabs people in the chest. They've been doing it since the Hammer horror days. You can find me over on my non-political radio show, Radio of Horror. You can also check us on the Dead TV podcast, where we are covering the Blade TV series with Kirk Sticky Smith Jones, not as a guest, but a really great show. Most of the actors from the Blade TV series all have careers currently. Like, they're on stuff or doing things, so it's a little difficult to get them. But we're trying, so we'll have to wait and see. But we're having a lot of fun with the show, and I think it still holds up. One of the better Marvel TV shows out there. So, alongside The Incredible Hulk, or Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or WandaVision, let's just use that as a good example. So, thank you, Travis, for coming on the show.
Absolutely, thank you for having me.
Don't forget, find us on your podcast streaming services, and leave us a great review if you could. Thank you very much, everyone. Good night. And now, enjoy this interview with the actor Eric, who played Pearl in the movie Blade. Okay. Joining me for this episode of my show, he played Pearl, the sluggish, obese vampire in Blade, Eric Edwards. Thank you for joining me, Eric.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Chris.
Shockingly, you don't look anything like your character.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. You'd be surprised what a little bit of cracking cane does.
What a disgusting, horrible-looking character for a movie where it's filled with the most beautiful, pretty vampires ever. Even Udo Kier is still pretty handsome looking in that movie.
Yeah. And also, like, it is. And I'm like this, farting, burping, huge Jabba the Hutt-ish vampire character.
Yeah, it's funny. We just got done recording the minutes because somebody had asked me who came on for it, said, so why is he so fat? And I was like, what? Did you miss the line? He's like, no, he eats the hearts of children.
Oh, is that? Wait a second. Is there a line that
they explain that you eat the hearts of children, and of course, probably children are filled with so much sugar and candy that their blood is like just like the worst thing for a diabetic vampire.
I guess so. I almost assumed that it's so weird. I must have slipped that, but like I always thought it was just I just drank so much gluttonous blood, you know, like nonstop, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta believe one or two things. You're in this universe, you're created as a vampire, and that's the way you always look. Or you can start out one way, and the vampirism will cure the disease. Because sometimes in some stories, vampirism will cure cancer and things like that. You know what I mean?
I was gonna say, I think doesn't it the concept? Well, hold on. Is I know it's so weird because it's been a while. It's been a minute since I've seen the entire movie, front to back. Like say childish vampires in Blade, I don't think they do.
TV show. So in the TV show, there's a child vampire that like slaps around the main big bad Van Scriver. He's like the main villain of the show. And then there's like that little black girl who's like this. When she was 12 years old, she did the movie. I'm trying to reach out to her now to see if she'll come on the show. She was a martial arts fighter.
She's in her 40s.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You got to be careful because there's actually a dancer with the same exact name who's also a black actress, and I reached out to her and her people, and they said, no, you want the martial artist. She was 12 years old when she did that movie. She's, like, now in her late 30s or 30s. So. So they're two different people. Our actress is a dancer. You want the martial artist. And she's, like, also, like, pinging Marvel like on her Instagram saying, hey, put me in the new Blade movie as well. Honey, there's no new Blade movie, unfortunately.
I heard he just came out saying he'd still like to do the movie.
He's in his like early to mid 50s at this point.
Yeah, but Wesley wasn't that much younger.
Wesley's in his 60s at this point.
Yeah, but I mean at the time. Well, yeah, I guess it was 20 years ago, so he would have been, like, early, you know, like, in his 40s.
The question is, though, like, how old is Blade, then, if he's, like, you know, if the actor's not...
Yeah, but what's his name? Mahershala Ali,
yeah.
Mahershala Ali. That dude still looks young, and he's jacked.
He's
still in great shape, so I don't think that's really that much of an issue, you know?
I just saw Jurassic World Rebirth, so, yeah, I mean, he still looks good.
Well, here's the thing, here's the concept, because, like, if they have a young vampire... Other than, because Blade is an exception to the vampire world, correct?
He's
a daywalker, so he can go both places. So he actually possibly can age, I would think. He definitely had to have aged because he was a baby, right, when he was born a vampire.
Weird science of vampires. He was born like a half-human, half-vampire. And in this world, I guess you can give birth to babies. I mean, if you watch 28 Years Later, spoiler alert, one of the things is that an infected person can give birth to a baby normally because the baby's protected in placenta fluid.
Ooh, I gotta see it. So I have yet to see 28 Years Later. I've big fan of it of the other two. You know, I haven't seen that one yet. So wow, that's because I was under the concept that if you think about it, if like they. You know, I know they created the language, and we never really sat down and talked about the actual lore of the world they created, but I guess I was in the assumption that I had a weight problem before I had turned going at that situation, you know.
I got you.
I had eaten baby hearts when I was human, you know.
How did this role come about, and were you aware what it was going to be when you read the script? Did they describe it in the script as this gelatinous blob of a character?
Okay. Yeah, and I know that the character was actually added. The character's not in the original comic book, I believe. What it was, there was a call coming, I got a call coming out, and I know they read like 250 people for it. They were like actually reading like sumo wrestlers, because he's actually technically Asian. If you look closely, he's supposed to be Asian. They read sumo wrestlers and a bunch of people. I remember when we were negotiating, when it came down, they were offering me the part, my attorney was very excited because I was one of the only fat guys in LA at the time. And he was like just holding their feet to the fire. Eventually he went, wait a second. Marvel got, not was it New Line at the time? New Line got smart and said, wait a second. He's going to be in 6 to 8 hours of makeup. He's going to have a guy playing his right arm and a guy playing his left arm. it's basically a glorified voiceover job. We're gonna settle. We want to settle at this price. We'll find somebody else. So it became. It was one of those where it was. I mean, I read three. I think I went in three times to read for the part. And then it was just like a lot of negotiation. But once it was, because it was, I was up for that, and I was up for American History X, you know. But Ethan got American History X, and I got Blade. So, and the rest is history. But it was, you know, it was just, you know, typical, you know, a call came out, went in, read the script. I was very, you know, when I got it, remember that time the only successful superhero movies were
Batman.
Either Batman, Superman, or was this pre-Spider-Man?
Yes. If you remember, at this time, Spider-Man was wrapped up in a lot of legal crap because of the Canon Films Group and all that debacle,
That's
which I'm not
right.
going to get into, but you can all look it up online. But yes.
But I also remember that they had to...
And don't forget, this is the year after the Batman franchise died. Like,
yeah, because
died.
Because of Schumacher.
Yes. Judge Dredd died. You know,
died.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles
these,
died. You know, all the franchises
all the,
just died.
But not only that, but all the, like, kind of the peripheral characters. Daredevil died, am I right? Daredevil was pre-Blade, I believe.
No, Daredevil didn't come out until 2003.
Oh, you're right, okay. Because what...
Incredible Hulk also died. No pun intended, because it was called The Death of the Incredible Hulk. But that was the last big Marvel property to die. It was the death of the Incredible Hulk. Not counting
Incredible
Nick Fury, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Not counting Generation X, the movie. Or Howard the Duck. But the Incredible Hulk, the death of the Incredible Hulk, the made-for-TV movie in 1990, was the final nail in the unfortunate coffin of the Incredible Hulk. And they were planning to bring it back. However... Unfortunately, Bill Bixby succumbed to cancer, and they were not going to be able to do the Incredible Hulk Lives again.
But if you think about it, the actual series Incredible Hulk, I mean, it kept on. You know, they made three or four actual TV movies post
three. Yeah. The Return of the Incredible Hulk, Trial of the Incredible Hulk, which did have Daredevil in it, and the Death of the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, it did. That's right.
They had. And by the way, for anyone complaining, Daredevil was wearing a black costume in the Trial of the Incredible Hulk. Daredevil wore an entire black costume the entire first season of Daredevil, and then Daredevil Reborn, or what was it called, Daredevil Born Again, he doesn't even become Daredevil again until most of the end of the last season.
That is so, you know, it's so strange. I got to give Daredevil another shot. I'm not going to say who it was, but there was somebody in that cast that just, it was very hard for me to watch.
Right. What's funny really, is that the Punisher also had one film with Dolph Lundgren.
Yes, which, can I tell you something? Was not bad.
No, I don't hate that movie. But even the director
also,
has admitted he's...
Thomas J. did one. Was that,
after,
that was post-Blade, right?
After your film, yeah. After Spider-Man and X-Men made it big at the box office and Blade 2 came out, that's when, like, we got the avalanche.
Of Marvel movies. But what it was, I believe, at that point, Marvel kind of cracked the code because they went... They go, let's not get an unknown to play Blade. Let's get a star.
Yeah.
Get Wesley. That was smart. And then also bringing in Steve Dorff. Is that, yeah, Steve Dorff, right?
Steven Dorff. Not to be confused with Steve Dorff. Steve Dorff is actually, I think, someone else in Hollywood as well.
No, he's actually, I think he's a little fella. But not as a dwarf.
I got what you're saying. Yeah.
He's not a tough guy. Steven Dorff what he does in that first film, unbelievable.
Right.
I remember during the table reading, which was really cool, because Wesley and him were cutting lines, because it's an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like cutting their own lines as they were reading, you know? And I was like, damn, that must be nice. I want more lines, you know? They're cutting their lines. And they were, he was such a good bad guy, you know, such, and he necessarily wasn't even fully bad. He just was a very greedy vampire. And Wesley with action was so good. So when that movie busted out and opened number one, because I remember it took out the Tom Hanks film with Matt Damon and World War II. Mm-hmm. It took that out, but then the next weekend, Rounders took us off the top. You know what I'm saying? Like, we were only it was only number one for 1 week. But, man, after the premiere, I remember they were looking at each other like, yeah, this is going to make some money. And they were and it did. It was great, dude. I mean, it was such a good movie. And also, it's one of the first films that made gore, like, really mainstream. You know, what? Like the blood sprinklers and all that shit.
Oh,
I mean, can I curse? I'm sorry.
It's a podcast. It's fine. If we broadcast this, we'll edit it. So
okay, but what was amazing about that film is that's one of the first like Hollywood movies that made gore really, I would say, mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really bloody, like incredibly bloody.
Did you did you know they redid that once at like a New York Comic Con at a nightclub?
No.
Yeah, they did that. You had to sign like a bunch of waivers, obviously. Because to be aware this is what it was, this coagulated kind of fluid stuff would it's going to stick to you, and they don't want to hear about it, and they don't want to hear your outfits ruined, you know what I mean? Like, basically, you're signing away, like, you need to be aware of things. Like, if you have allergies to skin-related stuff, do not do this. If you are worried about your clothes being ruined forever, and they will be, do not do this, you know what I mean? So you're signing all that stuff away, and sure enough, a lot of people were pretty PO'd that their skin was bleached for a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's pretty tough, because I remember we would, I know I had some of that stuff, but I had makeup on top of makeup.
Right,
you know?
But were you in the club scene just as yourself, or you're just Pearl, right?
I'm just Pearl. It's funny, because they actually, I remember, because that was one of the last things they shot, was
the
that club scene.
Oh, the club scene, okay, I thought you meant Pearl,
although it's the opening, but that's one of the last things they kind of shot, and they go, hey, wouldn't it be fun, and I believe I could not make it down that day to do it, because it would have been kind of fun. It's so weird because, like, I wrote when they were announcing they were going to reboot it, I actually wrote, like a big old Instagram, like, letter to, like, him and – who's the guy from Marvel that's kind of taking everything? Kevin
Feige.
I just wrote and said, look, there is no way anyone would recognize me, or if you want to put me back in the suit, feel free. Or, you know, because I would love to be part of the reboot because – well, once again, it'd be a nice, fun thing to say. Hey, I'm in both movies.
Somebody
you know?
Thought you were that character was. There's a character in Marvel Comics called Slug or something like that. He's like that big, and he wears like a big black Armani kind of suit. He's like a crime lord, and his whole thing is that he can move. He's obviously a mutant because nobody can move under that kind of weight. So he's a mutant who can move his body mass, and he's like I don't know which villain for which character he is, but he appears on like the cover for an issue of Web of Spider-Man, and he's just this big, fat dude in a black suit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. I know I have the body of someone that might have read a lot of comic books, but unfortunately I did not. Other than like, you know, typical, like, you know, like Spider-Man and, you know, like the mostly what popped up on TV or was in the big screen.
Yeah.
But like that is interesting because I remember when we did was it the 25 year anniversary or there's a 20 year anniversary or 25 year anniversary about 4 or 5 years ago pre pandemic they did a screen at the Chinese and you know I was there and the producer said that it was the only character added to the world, you know, that didn't exist in the world.
Yeah, well, technically. So a lot of people don't realize, like, characters like Whistler, he actually came from the Spider-Man animated series of the 90s. He was never a character in the comics. He was created for the TV show Spider-Man, the animated series, where Blade first appears. Blade was raised by a guy named the Jazz Man back in the 70s. That's his origin story.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, because it was a cult. It was like a very small... like a very street character, right?
Right. So Whistler was created by the animated series people, and then he graduated to live action very quickly, in fact, you know, quicker than Harley Quinn ever did. Because Harley Quinn was also created in the 1990s Batman cartoon series, and she didn't become live action until Birds of Prey, the TV series.
Now you're going to get me IMDb in, because I'm trying to figure out, is Whistler, was that Dorsk?
That was the late, great Kris Kristofferson.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Who we just lost. Who I never thought about asking to have on the show, and I was just like, damn it, I should have asked him to come on the show years ago. He's been alive my entire career.
Guys,
he just passed away,
wild,
like this year or last year, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of actors are dying. I mean, we're at that age where, you know, you're not like, Chris, I knew him first as a musician.
Yeah.
But like.
Yeah, he was in the original Star is Born with Barbara Streisand, the one that was remade with Lady Gaga.
Technically not the original.
He was really?
The first remake. It's actually a remake of a movie from, I believe, the 1930s or 40s.
Gotcha.
But yes, he was probably the closest to the version of what Bradley Cooper redid.
When you're spouting off the dialogue with all of the mumbo jumbo vampire dialect, was that all made up, or was that something actually language that
they had created an entire language?
Okay.
They had created an entire language. I remember that was like one of the big discussions. Like I was like, oh, okay, you know, because they phonetically spelled it. And at one time I knew exactly what I said in the vampire language. I think it's pretty much what I say kind of in, I believe they translated. Like I said, it's been so long since I've seen the movie. And I don't really look at myself when I watch a movie that I'm in. I'm watching everything else, you know. But, he had an entire, it's kind of like, I guess, like, you know, how there's an entire Klingon language that someone had created. And, that they have an entire vampire language that exists. So, I didn't write that beautiful dialogue, you know.
Did you, was that your voice or was that someone else's?
That was my mom, my impression of my mom's voice. Dropped onto, I think they might have done some computer jack, you know, might have put some computer stuff into it. But,
right.
It's like, that's what Frost said, you know.
Yeah. It definitely sounds like a little bit of a computer enhancement in a little bit of ways.
Yeah. And I remember, like, I guess my death scene really freaked out the producer's kids because they were all on set the day.
Oh, my God.
We filmed that. That was, like, I got to say, one of the most kind of intense, like, because you're just cooped up, you know. Spent, like, a lot of time. I mean, I remember my call would be, like, 4 o'clock in the morning. And I would fall asleep in the chair. Like, you hear stories about that you would fall asleep in those makeup chairs. And I did. And I'd have these trippy dreams of, like, raindrops, like hail hitting my forehead.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah.
What they'd be doing is they'd be, you know, patting down the skull cap and or the whole garb. It took 8 hours. It took, like, 8 hours, five to 6 hours to put it on and, like, a 45 minutes to take it off. And it was and when you're in the suit, I felt so bad for the guys that, like, were playing my arms and stuff. Cause, you know, we'd get in, you know, I'd sit in a chair, they'd be in there, and then they'd raise us up on this lift into this. It was like an igloo with a hole cut out of the top and for the arms. And it was, we were in there for like something, you know, two, three hours at a pop. And I felt really bad for those guys underneath, you know. Because they were right in gas shot, you know. So I tried to be polite and not be uncomfortable. But, you know, and if you had to take a leak, you're like, oh, crap, you know. And you go, okay, we gotta let you out, you know. So it was not the most comfortable job I ever did, but, you know, it was definitely, you know, it was a lot of fun. It was a great time, you know, a lot of blood. It was spin out blood, and I got to work with. I remember one of the ladies that was in makeup, that was a hair on the project. I was actually my first production assistant job when I was just out of college in Tucson, Arizona. She was like the hair person on that. So to see me go from that to this was like, you know, hey, I kind of made it. So it was a lot of fun. It was a great time, you know. Wesley was cool. The director was awesome. You know, Nani Ham. He was great. And I mean, it was a cool time, man.
I would love to talk to Nani Ham, but he's disappeared after the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen died.
Yeah.
He really disappeared. Like, people I talked to were just like, oh, I knew him. I have not talked to him in over a decade. Like,
yeah, well, I know he's popped up back to, I mean, well, I did a film with, is it Woodruff? It was called Fire City. Tom Woodruff.
Tom Woodruff. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know who he is. Yep.
Big makeup and guy, and this is a movie he directed, and he had known the director for years, and he, you know, I guess that's what Tom got one of the phone calls when he goes, oh my God, I got in an argument with Sean Connery. I mean, I guess him and Sean Connery did not get along whatsoever, and he was, when I gotta say, he was incredibly nice to me. I mean, And he also pulled me aside and said, look, there's a thing called star treatment. He said, so Wesley might want to, like, you know. And I was like, yeah, whatever. You know, it's cool. I mean, he wasn't like, damn stars. He was like, hey, just to let you know, I've got to make sure he's taking. I'm like, I got zero problem. He's taking the heat, not me. You know.
Let me ask you this: did while you were on set, and only because you know he had been around a lot longer than your career had started, did anyone mistake thinking that the porn actor with the same name was doing this move?
No, okay. No, but it's funny. That is funny because there's a he was yeah. I remember in high school people would back when I was in high school we had pornographic theaters and so they'd be ads in the paper, you know. And a paper is this thing that was on, you know, a physical thing you'd grab. They would cut out the ads and put them in my locker and stuff. But yeah, no, it's not. no one would think that. Although I have gotten. I don't think there's an IMDb credit that's thrown onto mine from his.
No, there isn't. Unlike, the actress we just got done talking about, the karate kicking one that fights Blade versus one who has nothing to do with Blade, to have the same name. And unfortunately, I also had to tell their people, hey, FYI, just so you're aware, her IMDb is listed for the girl who was in Blade, so you might want to get all that straightened out.
Yes, yes. That's wild, dude.
That is a little funny. The other thing I noticed you were in real quick is Candyman, who was the character Harold. Which one was that? I've seen Candyman dozens of times.
Don't blink, baby.
Oh, okay.
I want to say in the first like 7 minutes of the movie when they introduce Xander Berkeley teaching.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I am one of the students that I say something to him from the audience.
All right.
You know, like, you know, that's an example of young and collected. That's all. I remember the line because I beat out a lot of fucking guys for that part for some reason. And then I walk down and, you know, we have a little exchange and he calls me Harold and I get to, you know, have like a
Yeah. I remember him calling out someone named Harold. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And we're like, she goes, he introduces us to Virginia Madsen, which was on my bucket list of people to meet.
God. I mean, she's kind of all over the news right now because her brother just passed away, Michael Madsen.
Dude, what a sad, you know, like a bummer because he was, you know, he's like one of those cats that was, when he was good, he was really fucking good, you know.
Did you ever meet him?
No.
Or work with him? No? Okay.
Gotcha. Never had an opportunity to meet him. I mean, I met his sister, but I never met him, you know.
And who else did we just lose? We were just talking about dead people passing away. It just happened. Julian McMahon from Fantastic Four. Yeah. Dr. Doom. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He was in Fantastic Four. So weird. That Fantastic Four did not do well either.
No, but they made two of them, so.
Did they?
Yeah, that's they right. made Fantastic Four and Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer with two people playing the Silver Surfer. And now they have the female version of the Silver Surfer, which is not gender swapping the Surfer, people. It's
the comic book, right?
It's the comic book. It's Shyla Baal becomes the Silver Surfer instead of Norrin Radd. And that's a deep cut trying to even explain who they are. Norrin Radd is Surfer's real actual name from Zenla, his planet, and Shyla Baal is the woman he left behind so Galactus wouldn't eat their planet. And then at some point, the planet still gets destroyed, not because of Galactus, and he has to go to hell with Doctor Strange and, like, Adam Warlock to rescue Shyla Baal's pure soul from the hands of Mephisto, who just got introduced to the MCU, played by Sacha Baron Cohen.
Wow. Dude, you know, it's so interesting when you see people that are, like, only know comic books peripherally, you know, or that and don't realize how ahead of its time comic books are, or how, lack of a better term, well, hold on, how much empathy comic books have, you know? Like, if you think about it, I believe Falcon always took the place of Captain America, correct?
No. That was a very recent thing in the comic books. At no point in the history of Falcon has he ever been anyone else other than the Falcon. He was never called Black Falcon, people. That was Black Panther. Falcon was always Falcon. Until there was a story where Steve got really old and he gave up the shield to Falcon. And now it's flip-flop back and forth. And now there's like Falcon is Captain America and Steve is Captain America. So I'm not
but
even
it
kidding.
Did exist in, but it did exist in the comic books before.
Yes,
the
but
movie,
only
correct?
Recently. Only very, very recently. And it ended, that storyline ended when Steve was not mind-wiped or altered, but his history was changed, and Marvel wrote themselves into a corner with this one, that they had a back end out of it, that Steve was in fact a secret Hydra agent since World War II, because he yelled "Hail Hydra," and everyone lost their collective minds, hence the little line in Endgame where he's like, "Hail Hydra," and everyone in the elevator is like, "Oh, he's Captain America, is one of us." But they wrote themselves into such an awful corner with that storyline that Marvel immediately halfway through the story rewrote it and was just like, okay, so the good essence of Steve Rogers is still stuck in the cosmic cube running around while this guy is running around in his body. So it's like the Red Skull created his own version of Steve Rogers, not a clone. It's the body of Steve. And the good essence of Steve gets out, forces his way into his body, but then a duplicate version of the evil Captain America still exists because in a post-credit scene comic book, Hydra liberates him from a prison, and that was the last we saw him, only because I don't think a single writer at Marvel wants to touch that storyline.
But a lot of franchises and stuff have, like, done that and, like, said, you know what, we'll just forget that even happened.
Basically,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, do you know how many people have taken the Secret Soldier serum before they ever even got around to creating Isaiah Bradley, which is the black Captain America played by Carl Lumbly? It's, like, ridiculous. It's like, oh, there was all these other people before. Oh, and then we're going to create, like, Carl Lumbly was actually the second one. I'm like, but what about all the other people? They're like, ah, blah, 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 blah. They're still around. We'll just, you know, we'll just not mention them because we have to have our cake and eat it, too. So, and then, of course, there's also, like, John Walker. He's, like, the Republican D-bag Captain America. And then there's the gay Hispanic kid who's also Captain America. And then there's Bucky who's Captain America sometimes.
I want Union Jack to be introduced.
Union Jack is still around. He's still British. Nothing's been done with him. I mean, that's between him and Captain Britain, those are the two characters everyone says Henry Cavill should play, because Henry Cavill's actually British. So if he ever comes over to the MCU, instead of playing Hyperion, which is the Justice League, you know, version of, in Marvel, which I'm not going to get into all that, but, you know, God bless Mark Gruenwald. The two characters that Henry should play is either Captain Britain, the mutant from Excalibur, hung around with, like, you know, Nightcrawler in that series, or play Union Jack, who was a World War II, basically
virgin.
Captain America, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but there have been multiple people. He's not forever young. Like, he dies of old age, the next guy his son becomes, you know, Captain Britain. And his brother actually becomes Baron Blood, who is a Nazi vampire scientist.
Look at that.
And one of the best stories ever, Captain America decapitates him with his own shield. Like,
no,
Captain
nice.
America, like, in Shadow, Cap picks up the shield and just decapitates the guy because he cannot stop him any other way. And let's face it, Cap is a soldier. He'll take a life if he has to.
Well, everyone forgets that, too. Remember, didn't he used to – well, he carried a pistol, correctly?
He did, yes, off and on, yeah. But and Bucky, don't forget, was Captain America when Steve was killed off for a little while, and he was the Winter Soldier, so he wasn't afraid to carry a gun either. But they would also try to, you know, shoot to wound kind of thing and kill when necessary. Whereas, unlike Batman and Superman, who have to live by a code, Captain America is a soldier in the United States Army. So
that is
defending your country, not – taking the law into your own hands. You're a deputized member of this country's military, and if you're in combat, that's okay because you're in combat. But Cap's not going around the streets like the Punisher, just like throwing his shield at crooks, and he's probably putting him in traction for all we know. But I digress. This call's about to kill us. I want to thank you so much, Eric, for coming on the show. We'll probably edit some of this parts out for the vampire.
No, no worries. I'm sorry. I mean, I hope feel free to reach out to me again if you want. Okay?
Yeah, but thank you so much for coming on the show.